Welcome to the Content That Grows podcast, where we chat with folks from all kinds of companies to better understand the content they've invested in, how they did it, and how it impacted the growth of their company. I'm Nate Turner, co-founder and CEO of 10speed.io. Today, I'm sitting down with Amy Lexa. Amy is the director of content marketing at G2, where she supports a team of writers and editors focused on creating traffic-driving content. Prior to G2, Amy worked in the agency world and also has a degree in the culinary arts. She spends her free time traveling, cooking, and gardening. And with that, let's get started. Hey, Amy. Thanks for joining us today.
Hey, Nate. Good to be here.
Awesome. I think we'll talk quite a bit today about the career in the time you've had at G2, but would love to jump back to when you were at the agency All Points PR prior to G2. And start there and just learn a little bit more. It seems like you had a focus on content marketing for franchises, which I think is kind of an interesting take. So I'd love to just kind of hear a little bit more about what you were doing in that role and what content and content marketing was like there.
Yeah. So I went to school for journalism, actually. And right around when I graduated, which was like 2013, it was kind of like the topic of conversation was like jobs are really hard to find, especially in media. So just take whatever you can get. And right at the end of college, I did a PR internship and I was like, oh, this is like fine. I could do this. Even though there's kind of this like conversation around like PR versus journalism and all kinds of things. So actually when I started at this agency, I was in PR, but I quickly decided that it was not good for me. the rejection that publicists face just constantly sending emails into the ether and getting no response was like quite soul crushing. Even though some people are very good at it, I was like, I don't think this is right for me. But I was noticing that content marketing was getting more popular. This is like around 2014. So clients were asking for it. We didn't really have a service around it. So I helped our agency add content marketing services to like our list of services and rolled it out to these franchise company clients. I also learned a ton about franchising, which is kind of a weird little subculture world. They have, I mean, everything from their own publications and software. Everybody knows each other, very tight knit. A lot of the content was specifically created to help franchisors, which are like the parent company, sell franchises to people.
Got it. Okay. Was there any content being created for the franchisees or like specific locations or something that could be used by all locations as well?
Yeah. So, it depended on the client, I guess, but much of it was for individual franchisees. So it kind of was like small businesses operating within larger businesses. So it felt a little less like, oh, you're working for this large corporation and more like you're helping, you know, a couple of people who put their entire life savings into building, you know, or buying this business, helping them with some marketing materials that'll really make a difference. So that could be like, in the content space, it was a lot of blog posts. They're pretty short, really like kind of storytelling, not much of an SEO angle to it, a lot of email marketing, that kind of thing. So we got really good at repurposing because, we have to do this across however many, clients.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I was just going to ask what types of content you were creating. Cool. Yeah. That's really interesting. And, was that just out of curiosity? Was that like, were they constantly coming to you or did you sort of, you said you sort of helped create that part of the agency to do content marketing. So is that also something that you took on and kind of came to the franchisees with your suggestions on strategy and things you should be doing? And just kind of, if so, just kind of curious how you were coming up with that.
Yeah. Well, one of the things about, agencies that I think makes them successful is that everything is pretty replicable. So if one thing works, it's like, how do we roll this out to everybody as like a value add? So there are certain types of blog posts that would perform really well or that would make the franchisees very happy. Really anything about like their entrepreneurial journey, anything that kind of talks about them as individuals. And then obviously the bigger company has its own talking points that they want to to be involved. And sometimes it would involve some, you know, adding some keywords in. But I think at that time in content marketing, SEO and content were not necessarily super together, or they, you know, maybe just not in the sector that I was in. So it was kind of like, it was just starting to pick up some speed there. And in terms of like pitching ideas and things like that, yeah, I mean, it's the kind of the storytelling skill that a lot of writers have, to be able to pull out the interesting nuggets and build something that's interesting and worth reading, out of it.
Yeah. Okay, cool. And then you're director of content marketing at G2 now, but you've held a couple different roles there. So how did the process of going from All Points PR to G2, like, what was that process like?
Yeah, so I was at All Points for about 5 years, and I learned a ton. I learned so much about how businesses operate, like individual small businesses, and made some great connections. But ultimately, I think I was ready to move in-house. Agencies are very like high pressure. You don't just have one boss, you have like your boss and then all these customers who need things from you and things like that. So it felt like a natural progression for me. The other thing is that, like I mentioned before, I was seeing how content marketing was evolving, and the world of franchising was just really far behind. So I felt like I was kind of stalled in my own opportunity to grow. And I really wanted to go and work with people who knew a lot more in content than I did. So I wanted to go somewhere big enough where they had a team of content, you know, writers, but, you know, small enough that I could still make an impact. So yeah, the learning from other people part is really big and has been a consistent theme for me. But yeah, huge change, to go from like a very structured agency to like getting tossed into the startup world at a relatively early stage startup company. Yeah. Huge culture shock for me.
Yeah. Yeah. I could see that. So what was your initial role at G2, and kind of tell us a little at the same time, like the state of content marketing and the blog and SEO and kind of all of that when you joined, kind of what did you come into?
Yeah. So I started as a content marketing manager. I think I was technically hired as an individual contributor, but our team was changing a lot, so it moved into people management pretty quickly. And it was something that I had done in the later years of the agency, but it was just a very different approach. So I was a little nervous about it, because I think the agency had more of a like a micromanaging approach to it, and I was very turned off by it. And I just thought, like, if this is what it's going to be, then I don't really know that that is a career path that I want to take. I think I can trust myself to be an individual contributor and, sure, you know, do good work and rely on myself. But as for management, I'm not really sure. And then the way things changed at G2, it's like full 180. It's cool. The part of my job that I enjoy the most. I love the leadership and management. And, you know, once you expand it a little bit to, kind of, you know, experiencing it in different ways with the people themselves versus, you know, one overall strategy, I think it's actually has been very rewarding for me. But like I said, we're coming from an agency where everything is very replicable. It was kind of a culture shock to land somewhere where people just took like a bite of this huge apple every day and said, this is what I'm going to do. And like, hopefully we're all moving in the same direction.
Sure.
So I think I was hired kind of to deliver some structure to the team. Because a lot of the folks that I was working with at that point, it was either their first job and they had been there since the early days of the company, or, you know, maybe they had different job experiences that didn't necessarily lend itself to the kind of like hyper organized background that I had come from. And part of that is the company that I was at, and part of it is just who I am as a person. I'm very process driven. So, you know, establishing some flexibility and autonomy for writers, but also, you know, making sure that expectations are clear and people know what they're doing and why they're doing it. And you had asked about what kind of content it was at the time. So, like many early stage startups, I think it was just kind of like run full speed after the goals, and not a ton of time to slow down and think about why are we doing this? Is it working? You know, that kind of thing. So in terms of content, at that point, we were pretty much just choosing the biggest keywords that were even loosely connected to software in any realm and writing the fastest articles that we could on them. So there wasn't a lot of peer reviewing happening, not a ton of quality control. Everybody is a very good writer or was a very good writer, but you know, even really good writers need editors. So people were mostly responsible for just assigning themselves work and tracking their own progress. So it was kind of like the North Star was high traffic over everything else. And it just seemed like people were creating content for something to hopefully go viral. And that would help us hit our traffic goals.
Interesting. It's fascinating to hear that, because I feel like G2 is certainly one of those unique businesses that you're just sort of at the center of an entire ecosystem, and you're able to write about so much that it sounds like it was almost just like, it didn't have to be this set content strategy or roadmap or specific topics. It was like, there's just so much green space or white space or whatever you call it, that people could just go kind of pick whatever made sense or had the most volume and go after it. So is that like, how did that start to change and formalize, and is that what you started to introduce, or how did that evolve?
Well, like you said, the company is in a, or kind of always has been in a unique position where, like, you know, maybe at first there weren't that many companies that were customers that we cared about growing traffic to those categories. So it was fine to just kind of say, hey, let's pull some keywords on topics X, Y, and Z and just run after them. But then the company starts to grow and pick up velocity. We have this huge list of keywords that we have to tackle. And it's kind of like, we got to figure out a way to prioritize this. So the company as a whole kind of took a pause and figured out, you know, where are our priorities? What are the most important categories that hit X, Y, and Z, you know, parameters? And I think our content strategy kind of evolved along with that. The benefit for us is that we were a smaller team, so it's easier to execute those changes on a small scale than it is for a whole company to do it. So we've been through several iterations of content strategy in the last 3 years that I've been at G2. I'm very happy with where it is today, very proud of all the work that's gone into it. About 2 years ago, so after I moved into kind of the head of content marketing role, we set up some pretty strict editorial standards. So there were no more of those quick hit articles. Everything was connected to a priority software category that was determined by the company. So there was a really clear connection between, we want this type of reader and we want them to make this action to read this, you know, click on this category page. So we, you know, since then have kind of honed that process and made a lot of changes to it. There are a couple of specific challenges that we faced making that transition, because as you can imagine, it was a big one.
Cool. But so there's two things you mentioned there, the company sort of aligning with the company on the priority, and then sort of the desired action of clicking into the category page. So the first one, I like that, because I think that's something we try to touch on a lot, is like content strategy or keyword research or whatever you're doing shouldn't just be kind of in its own world and going after volume or whatever. Like it should be very clearly aligning to company priorities, to your product, to, you know, supporting sales, all that stuff. So I like hearing that. How did that, is that like an annual thing, or was it like how did that kind of get set and then you work off of it? Like, tell us more about that.
Yeah, the company determines, like each software category is kind of tiered differently based on like this whole algorithm that's been created. But essentially it boils down to like, how popular is the category on the website? How many people are searching for it? How many reviews are in that category? That kind of thing. So, you know, there are, what we'd like to do is We try to aim our content at the categories that are just below like tier one and two. So we have the most ability to move them into a higher category. So it's where there's the most potential to like really make a difference on these like large to medium sized categories. Obviously there's still maintenance that needs to be done to make sure that the higher tier categories are done. So we have a really good, I guess, system across the company for saying like, this is exactly how things are categorized. Team A is doing this, team B is doing that. I think it's annual, although it's like reevaluated at the fiscal half. And for us, you know, you could get so granular with any of these specific categories. So we try to organize them into personas so that people, we can assign one persona to one writer. So we have like one writer who writes on HR, and within her persona, there could be, you know, 10 to 30 individual software categories that she focuses on. And in each of those, there's an entire keyword map. So there's a lot, you know, there's a lot of opportunity. And if you think about it as, you know, from another company, like Sprout Social, for example, like that's one software in one category. Yes, it's a big software with lots of different arms, but it pretty much fits in one. So the challenges that a content marketer faces at a company like that, I think, are different than at a company like G2, where the possibilities are really endless and you have to not get overwhelmed by the options and just really focus.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Cool. Well, yeah, I mean, that makes sense that the priority category stuff is sort of based on your algorithm. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And you mentioned like, so the goals of driving people getting them to click into the category page. So is that like a metric that you have tracked and you're sort of analyzing content by, like, do you have like, you know, conversion rate from, you know, blog post to category page, or is that something you're tracking at the post level?
Yeah, we do. There are different types of posts that lead to different places, of course. But I would say what we try to do is create pretty top of funnel content that helps people who are making business decisions understand the software that they're working with or be able to do their jobs better, is what we like to say. So it could be clicking into the category. It could be clicking into reviews for that software. It could be leading to another, you know, pillar article that's even bigger on the topic. So there are a few ways we measure it. We have on-page CTAs. We also have recently undergone a pretty large content migration that took about half of our content from the blog. And we the engineering team built like a resources tab on G2's category pages themselves. So now we have those top of funnel articles that really closely align with the categories living right next to the category itself. So less of a journey for users to have to go through to get the information that they want.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Yeah. That's really neat. And then you sort of just alluded to sort of like when you mentioned like someone could have the HR category, for example. I'd love to dig in and kind of understand how the team's structured, you know, and like, just if, I guess, to be more specific, cause that's pretty general, but like, is it all writers? Like, how do you break out strategists and like, yeah, just a little bit more to start there would be great.
Sure. So we are very closely connected with the SEO team. So our team is referred to as CSO, which is content, SEO, and offsite. So link building also. And the writers, we have about, I think, like 8 or 9 full-time writers right now, between our offices in the US and our global offices. So each of those writers owns one persona for 1 year. There are some people who prefer to really stick to one persona. There are people who like to move around. So we have people who kind of do all different things. Two managers under me who manage the writers. We have two copy editors, and everybody participates in a peer review process that make sure that content is checked like 5 or 6 different times before it goes to publish, which sounds crazy and really long, but it ensures really, really good content at the end of it.
Yeah, I would say that sounds like more than what I typically hear from folks. Is that like, did you grow into that over time? Like, it was one, like, because you mentioned there was no peer review at the beginning, so I'm assuming you didn't go straight to 6.
That was one of the challenges that we initially faced, was like time and output and how that changes, because, you know, it takes writers a long time to create very high quality content that fits a specific set of guidelines. So we had to essentially prove to senior leadership that less quantity of content could result in even better traffic numbers, maybe not necessarily bigger traffic numbers, but more qualified audience. So it took a lot of convincing and sharing of thoughts and feelings, but eventually we got there. And it's also, you know, a lot of change management too. It's hard for a group of writers who you have been telling, just write 15 articles this month, just get them out there, we need to cover all these categories, to turn on a dime and completely, you know, 180 their writing process and the goals that they're going after. So we had to show up for them and make sure that we were showing proof that their work was garnering the traffic that we wanted. So what we're going from is writers doing maybe, like, depending on their, you know, speed and level, maybe 8 to 14 articles per month that vary from 500 to 1500 words about topics like how to change your Facebook password, to being like, hey, you know, in a good month, you'll write 5 articles. And those are maybe 2,000 to 3,000 words long. They require a ton of research. They're on things like, you know, pillar pieces around absence management software, or like private cloud software. So the audience for those types of content and the voice that they need to write them is very specific, very niche, and very, very different. So, you know, we're going from millions of monthly visitors to the blog to maybe 500K, and we did it on purpose. So it's like, you know, we just had to really, really had to show up and garner a lot of trust from stakeholders to, you know, to say like, the good content is worth it and will be worth it. We just need things to even out. Yeah, we eventually got our goals reforecasted to something more reasonable. And, you know, so there's been some minor changes since then, but that's kind of the model we've been going for the last year and a half or so.
Yeah. Okay. That's cool. And you mentioned like shifting to quality over quantity in terms of the traffic. Do you have specific ways that you're sort of measuring that or indicating that it is more qualified traffic?
Yeah, I mean, like you mentioned before, tracking how users, like what users do after they read an article. Are they then clicking to the category page, or are they just leaving? Like, what are our bounce rates looking like? Repeat traffic as well. You know, somebody who is searching into a category so specific, they're going to start to see G2 as a resource and as the expert. Somebody who wants to search for what's your Facebook password is just going to find the answer and move on. They don't really care where they're getting that answer. So putting user intent at the heart of everything that we do has helped us weather algorithm changes really well, because those are pretty chaotic, but keeping that front and center has helped us keep things relatively steady over the last few years.
Yeah. Yeah, I would imagine. Cool. So like 8 or 9 writers, you know, like the amount of categories, and even with the shift to like a more quality approach, you still are doing a lot of volume, you know, relative to most companies. So having like been somewhere in your previous role where you literally helped start a content marketing function, even though it wasn't in-house, to now being here, I think it would be interesting to hear your thoughts on like for someone who is maybe like we see with a lot of companies, you know, maybe 1 or 2 writers putting out maybe 8 blog posts a month, something like that. Like, but at a point where whether they're like about to raise Series B or whatever, like, thinking about sort of future growth and like maybe hitting an inflection point, what are some things you would share for kind of going from a smaller writing team content operation to like, you know, the level of scale that you're at?
I would say first and foremost, be really clear about identifying the end result that you want. I think a lot of people try to do all things, and whether it's like, yeah, we need leads from this, but we also want traffic and we also want like customer education. We want to answer this one specific query that we consistently get. I would say be really specific about what the purpose of your content is and just go for that. Don't try to do everything all at once. And I would say to use data to guide your decisions as much as you can. It can be hard when you're a really small team or even just one person. And I've been there too, where it's like, the decisions aren't being made based on what should be done. It's being based on what is my bandwidth. And that's a natural thing to do. So I would also say, you know, do a thorough competitive analysis to understand your niche and your market placement. And my advice to companies would be to hire an SEO or invest in SEO really early on, because SaaS is incredibly crowded. And I think a lot of earlier stage companies can honestly be a little bit delusional about where they stand with the rest of the market. So
sure. Sure. Yep. Cool. And what about like any sort of like systems or processes? Like, I think a lot of people would scratch their heads at how you even like hire that many writers, and, you know, and like how often do you do research, you know, and just like some of that stuff. Like, how, like any advice on sort of the operations side of it?
Yeah, that's my favorite part of all of this, is I think I've learned about myself that I really am like an ops person behind it all.
Yeah.
But it does help to, like I said, use data to decide the decisions that you make. Don't be afraid of having difficult conversations with senior leadership. Even saying things like, is this content that I am currently creating, is this something you are proud to share with prospects, investors, whatever? What will it take for me to get to the point where you want to share this kind of thing? Because, you know, those are really good advocates for you as well. Procedurally, I would say early on, one mistake that I made was saying, we'll just split up the work between everybody. Everyone's going to do a little bit of link building. Everyone's going to do a little bit of keyword mapping. Everyone's going to be responsible for their own metrics. And you've got, like, honestly, people who are really early on in their careers being spread so thin that they don't really know, they're not able to focus on one thing. So if you have people who are numbers folks who want to dig into the analytics, just let them. Like, let people play to their strengths. It can seem character building to force people to do the things that you want them to do, but honestly, at the end of the day, people are going to be more satisfied if they feel like they have a good goal that they're working towards. Also be honest and transparent about where things stand with the company and with your conversations with senior leadership. Nobody likes feeling like they're in the dark. And especially as a company grows, things can feel murky and unclear. So making sure that your team kind of trusts you in your decision-making is really important to getting people's buy-in. And then, you know, when you have dedicated people that you feel like you can trust, it's easier to dig into things that are unclear and, you know, to learn new things together.
Yeah. Okay. That's awesome. Very cool. As you've kind of been evolving, obviously, into some of the quality side of things, that sounds like it's been a big shift. So it's probably been most of your focus, but like, have you been looking, I'm just kind of curious, like what channels or tactics, you know, for content you're maybe a little bit bullish on or looking at and saying, hey, for the next, you know, 12 to 18 months, we need to start thinking about this because it's going to be a big factor. You know, what's some of the stuff that's been on your mind?
Well, we have been working on some different content types. It's not like what you're thinking, like video or audio or something like that. Honestly, like we probably don't do that great of a job of a video. We built this whole beautiful video studio in the office right before COVID, and now it's just sitting there unused because everybody works from home. So there's, you know, there's obviously that route, but we noticed in the most recent algorithm update that glossary type pages are doing really well. So we've been kind of digging into exploring those a little bit more. It's a challenge, right, to read the algorithm and figure out what's going on with search. Obviously, I acknowledge that a lot of the content that my team is responsible for is entirely traffic-based, and that's not necessarily a lot of companies' MO. So we do diversify as well, and we've been trying to get more of like a strategic approach to case studies and more of those traditional content types. The other thing, I mean, I guess based on kind of everything that I've said that is kind of like, haha, a little bit backwards, is that we have put a lot of time and effort into developing content quality that ends up being very long. And we're looking at how does the algorithm respond to shorter articles too, you know? So a little bit backtracking in an experimentative way, but with more information than we had a few years ago, you know, and with the idea of meeting the user where they're at, not doing it as fast as possible to try to check every single box.
Yep. Yeah, that's great. Especially, I just want to hit on the last point you just made. We are seeing the same thing for sure. Like there's both glossary and short form. I think that you're right. Like there was such an over indexation to long form, you know, skyscraper, their articles 5,000, so we got to write 6,000 words, you know, like it just like this never ending growing of the length of the content. And so what we're seeing is like when you really are super dialed in on the intent, there are some of those that are very clear that someone doesn't want to read 4,000 words at the moment. They need the answer. You can get the rich snippet much easier and go from there and actually have a much more satisfied search and therefore get the rankings and whatnot. So I think it's great. And to what you said though, I don't think it's necessarily, I wouldn't consider that like backtracking on a quality conversation, because I think it can still be very quality short form content. It's just a little bit different in how it plays out.
Right. Even more so too. I mean, I'm not going to say it's easy to write an article that's 5,000 words, because, you know, that is a struggle for sure. But it is really hard to write 500 words that are, you know, to write just the really short, really good article that answers the query and can compete with something huge and long from, you know, a company with an amazing domain ranking.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. Cool. One of the last areas I wanted to touch on, I think, as we, you know, think about like content folks, marketing leaders, anyone that might be listening to this podcast, they are in some cases needing to make the case for a bigger investment, or like you said, you know, hiring SEO early on, whether that's in-house or outsourcing, whatever, or it might be wanting to take a new direction like you sort of did and getting that buy-in and that trust. What would be some advice you have for anyone who's sort of looking to make that case, whether for an investment or sort of a new direction? What would be your advice?
I would say, I guess on a tactical level, think about setting up a system for auditing and refreshing your existing content and have a conversation about what is and isn't working. And the sooner you can remove like writer ego from that conversation, the better. Because, you know, we're all trying to work towards the same goal of quality. And, you know, I look back on some of the things that I wrote and probably still have on the G2 website somewhere, and I'm like, I was clearly running for the deadline there, you know. It's not an indictment of my character. It's just what we were doing at the time, and things totally that's how the nature of this business is. Things change all the time. So think about how you're scaling. Like, our original model of G2 content was we just have one spreadsheet of keywords that everybody picks off of, not a scalable solution. So I would say invest in software that makes your life easier, that makes growing easier. I have some that I like am totally in love with and that I evangelize to everybody. I say it a lot, but like, put the user intent above everything else. That is a pretty clear cut way to make good choices, and an easy way to, you know, to validate your case to senior leadership for why you might need more, headcount or more resources. Sure. If you can say, this is what our searchers are looking for, this is what our readers are looking for, we want to be able to give it to them, the demand is there, we just can't keep up with the output, I feel like that's a much better case to make. You know, the other thing is that has been helpful for us is having somebody evangelize the value of content marketing internally to decision makers in your company and see where content can solve problems. I think turning it from reactive content creation to proactive content creation was a game changer in our positioning within our own company and just in the kind of the respect and reputation that we've been able to build for ourselves. And then I think, you know, make sure that you're talking to customers as much as you can, or talking to people who talk to customers as much as they can, where you can clarify pain points or make tweaks to things like page design or, you know, how you do your headlines. Like, really think about it from the perspective of a user and a customer.
Yeah. Okay. Awesome. All right. Well, before we wrap up, if you enjoyed this episode, visit 10speed.io/podcast for the show notes. Make sure you subscribe or follow to get any future episodes. And with that, Amy, thanks so much for joining. Any final advice or encouragement for marketers, content marketers looking to kind of grow their company through content? Any advice you would have for them?
I would say just start. The community of content marketers is a very helpful group, and be open in seeking feedback on the work that you do. Your first draft is probably going to suck, and that's a good thing.
Yeah. Okay. Love
it. Thanks for having me, Nate.
Awesome. Yeah. Thanks so much.